Your Bible's up to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. 1 Thessalonians 5. About 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, pay attention to news or see headlines. You might have caught the headline that a man named Robbie Knievel died. Well, that name Robbie might not mean much to you. The name Knievel will mean something to most people here. Robbie was the son of Evel Knievel, that probably the most well-known daredevil in U.S. history. His son kind of took on that mantle. When his dad retired, his son kind of became the next one jumping over buses and all that. We know what that word daredevil means. Kind of like it's defined as reckless. Most people would think of it as like an adrenaline junkie, a thrill seeker, someone who has just absolutely no regard for danger. A daredevil as the Knievels were. Getting as close to death as possible. The problem is, when you keep getting close to death, you eventually die. There was a thing on YouTube several years ago, I don't know if it's still posted or not, one of those guys in the, kind of like the bat suit kind of thing, that base jumping, jumped off with the intention of flying through a suspension bridge. He didn't fly through it. Didn't end very well. You flirt with death, and eventually it happens. What about Christians who flirt with sin? Get as close as we can to it. The daredevils don't intend to crash. But they're going to do something that puts them in a position where it's likely, where it's possible. Christians don't tend, we don't go in with our eyes, we don't want to sin. But we put ourselves close as we can get to it. This idea of just reckless. We can match that definition. I think we can get as close to it as possible. The problem is, just like the base jumper trying to fly through a bridge, many have died spiritually, seeing how close they can get to it. What we're talking about today is abstaining from that. Daniel led us in a wonderful song to set the stage for that. Abstaining from evil. Not seeing how close to evil we can get without actually becoming engaged in it. The admonition is not to see how close we can get. The admonition is to not be anywhere around it. To abstain from that. Let's look at that. Look in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. Really interesting how this letter ends. If you look in verse 14, it says, "Now we exhort you, brethren." And basically from that point on to the very end verse where he starts his salutations, basically from verse 14 to verse 26 are these one sentence verses. "Now we exhort you, brethren," bam, 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 bam. One sentence exhortations. Some of them two and three words. Not just sentences, just very short phrases. Verse 16, "We exhort you. Rejoice." Verse 17, "We exhort you. Be prayerful." Verse 18, "We exhort you. Be thankful." That's how this letter ends. But now drop down with me to verse 22. In the midst of these exhortations, abstain, the old King James says, from all appearance of evil. Newer versions have the idea of every form of evil, whatever form it might be. But these are all these one sentence verses. In reality, verse 22 ought to be with verse 21. They fit together. They are actually one thought. I want you to see the connection between them. Skip that first part in verse 21. Look how verse 21 is. "Hold fast that which is good. Abstain from all forms of evil." Do you know what they are? Those are contrast. Hold fast. Hold on as tight as you can. Stay as far as you can away. Hold fast. Abstain. Good and evil. Hold fast. Hold on tight to everything that's good. Everything God calls good, you hang on to it. Everything God calls evil, you abstain from. 21 and 22 work together. It's stated once in the positive, and it's stated once in the negative. But they're teaching the same thing. They're teaching the same idea of thought. There are things to hold on to. There are things to not be anywhere around. How do you know the difference? That's the part we skipped. That's the first part to verse 21. Test all things. Prove all things. Examine all things. Depending on the version that you're using. Now you put all that together. You've got a positive admonition and a negative admonition. Something to hold on to, something to reject. And the only way we're going to know which is which is to put them to the test. Now we've got to go off grid just a minute. What the commentators say about that idea of testing all things seems to be a metaphor. It seems to be something that would have been understood in that time period that we might not jump onto as quickly. And it has the idea of connecting it to a first century money changer. Think for a second of, think about one of the feast days under the law of Moses, where you've got people, you've got these Jews from all over the world who congregate there in Jerusalem. And now when you get there, now you have to buy things. But you don't live in Jerusalem. So you live in all these various places. You come, and that's what the money changers that we read of in the Gospels were about. I come from wherever I am, and then I exchange my currency for the things for the local stock. And there was nothing wrong with that. Unless you put it inside the temple. Jesus didn't rebuke them for changing money. He rebuked them and overthrew tables because of where they were doing it. But that was a very common custom to change money out. And what the history tells us is if you got all these people coming in, you're the money changer. That's your job. You don't know who these people are. You couldn't find their home city with a map. And here they are giving you these foreign currencies. And you're about to give them real money back, and you've got to know if it's real. You test it. Have you ever gone to a local spot and you hand over a $20 bill and so the one there at the register takes out this magic marker thing and starts writing on it? Have you seen that? Hand over a $100 bill and they get that marker out. I don't know what they're doing. I've never passed any funny money, so I don't know what it's going to look like if you don't give them the real. They know. I don't know what that marker's going to do if counterfeit shows up. The one running the register knows. Me and you might not know what a Chinese yen looks like. We might not know the real from the fake. Me and you don't have to. A money changer better know. And that's the so with that principle of before you just take something, you check and make sure it's genuine. And he's using money changers, it seems to be, as an example of that. And they said, now, once you've tested it, if it's real, then you hang on to it. Once you've tested it, if it's not the genuine, you abstain from that. Get it away from you. It has no value to you. That seems to be the principle. That seems to be what these two verses, when put together, are teaching. So let's get a couple of definitions real quick. In verse 22, that word for abstain simply just means stay away. And again, that idea about every form of evil means that however many various ways it can appear, whether that be doctrinal, whether that be some practical application in the moment, all forms, stay away. How do we know what to stay away from and hold tight to? We put it to the test. That's the admonition in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. Now, how do we apply that? Today, how do we apply that? Because this is us. We have to test the things we do. We have to test the things we engage in. We've got to test the things we accept or not accept. And what can we learn from abstaining from all forms of evil? This putting things to the test. Some first application is, let's just be honest, sin has an attraction. Sin has a pull. We're not helping anybody. We're not helping our kids. We're not helping our neighbors. We're not helping ourselves if we try to sugarcoat that and try to ignore the reality of that. In Genesis chapter 3, it talked about it looked good to Eve. It looked good to her. In 1 John chapter 2, that's the lust of the eyes. Things look good. Also in 1 John 2, lust of the flesh, pride of life. Some things look good, some things feel good, some things make us feel good about ourselves. But I do want to turn to Genesis 3. Not to read verse 6. I've got verse 6 on your outline. I'm going to show you in verse 3. chapter 3, verse 3. Interesting statement about that tree. She said it looks good. How'd she know it looked good? Have you ever thought about where the tree was? Genesis 3, verse 3. The fruit of the tree, which is in the middle of the garden. It wasn't in a closet somewhere. It wasn't on a computer screen in a basement. Slap dab right smack in the middle of the garden. In the midst of the garden was the thing they had. The only thing. The one thing under the sun they were directly commanded to abstain from. And it was there every day. Right in the middle of their existence. You and I have sinful things. And we are in the midst of them. We can't go to the monastery. As a matter of fact, 1 Corinthians chapter 5 teaches the contrast to that. You live in this world because there are people in this world who are sinful. They need to see you. You're the light. You're the salt. We don't go to an island, live alone. We don't go to the monastery so that we come into contact with no one. Yeah, that does remove a lot of temptation maybe, but it's not our calling. It's not our work. It's not our role. No, we live in the midst of a lot of things we have to abstain from. They are present. They are ever before our eyes. And that's the same way it was in the garden. They had it so much easier than us. No, they walked by it every day. To whatever extent. Whatever the extent in the midst of the garden means to us. Whatever it meant to them. Just make sure we understand the clarity of it. It wasn't hidden. It wasn't something they had to go prowl for. Me and you don't have to hunt if sin is what we're looking for. Sin has an inviting attraction. And we see the traction whether we want to or not. We're in the middle of it. We see it. The call is to abstain from it. So there's the first point. Sin has this incredible pull. Here's the second thing. Sin isn't always clearly apparent. We might not recognize even that we are looking at it. I was just saying, Ty and Mallory got a new place, and Troy and Christine have got a new place. They were both of them recently talking about their dogs and the type of thing they've got to keep their dog where they need it to be. And they have different systems, but it's kind of the same concept. The idea of, and you're familiar with them. I bet there's others here that have the same idea. The dog wears his collar. And as it gets closer to the boundary, it starts sending this noise to their ear. And they've been shocked enough that when they start hearing that noise, they pull away. If they ignore that and they get closer and closer, it stops being just a noise and it sends the juice. Just think for a second. I'm not trying to be silly, but wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't it be nice if there's some collar we could wear that as we got close to sin started ringing the ears, and all of a sudden we're not daydreaming anymore. Okay, what am I near? What do I got to be careful of? What do I need to be paying attention to? And if we kept on getting closer, we ignore it. Just locks you up. How'd you like that? I'll tell you what, when you smart people figure that out, the line to buy it starts right behind me. I'd be all over that, and I know you'll be close. You'd be right there too. That would be nice to have this thing that with all these sinful things that we might not even be aware of, things that we are close to, that in our daydream and in our funk, which is not even, just shocked us. What are you doing? Get away from here. Back up. Our dogs have got such a thing. We do not. We've been admonished to abstain. The dogs just get shocked until muscle memory kicks in and they know where not to go. You and I've got to train ourselves. When Eve got close to that fruit, it's in the middle of it. She saw it. It's in the midst of the garden. As she got close to it, as she reached her hand out to it, lightning didn't strike. The shock didn't happen around her neck. And nothing's going to do that when you and I reach for stuff we don't need to be reaching for either. when you and I engage in what we ought to be abstaining from. Not going to get shot if there's no lightning bolts coming down to pop us. Turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 11. Here's the problem. Here's the danger. And you put these two together and it is huge disadvantage to us if we let it be. 2 Corinthians 11. And I know that you're familiar with this, but we just need to be reminded. Let's read it again, even though we know it. We're just being reminded of the enemy, who it is we are at spiritual war with. Our soldiers today in the Middle East, they're not wearing green camouflage like they did in the 1960s. We're fighting a different enemy in a different place. And so our soldiers go in prepared for that. Who are we fighting? 2 Corinthians 11, verse 13. There are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into apostles of light. And do not be shocked by this. Do not marvel at this. Satan himself masquerades, fashions himself as an angel of light. Therefore, it is no great thing if his ministers also be transformed as ministers of righteousness. Put these two together. Sin has an attraction, and it doesn't always stick out as sin. It doesn't announce itself. You know, we've used this example before. We probably will again. Satan doesn't pop up like he does on the Elmer Fudd cartoon with the red thing and the ears and the pitchfork. No. He looks like he doesn't present himself like that. He presents himself as our best friend. He presents himself as people who have our name, our last name. He presents himself as preachers. Presents himself as Bible class teachers. Test and hold tight. Test and abstain. Examine and hold tight, or examine and abstain. That's why the testing has to happen. That's why that's why 1 Thessalonians 5 was that admonition that it was. Because sin has an appeal, and because it doesn't always present itself so clearly, we've got to put things to the test. That takes us back to where we started at. Put it to the test. It's our duty to prove things, to examine things, to not accept things at face value. When the money changers were given over things, they looked it over. They flipped it over. They put it in their mouth. Whatever it is that it took to test it. Several years ago, when I went to I went to a pawn shop. I was looking for a guitar. I wanted a cheap guitar. And I figured you'd get one, they're cheap. Somebody buys one, they figure out they don't really want it, so I got a cheap one. While I was there just killing time, the lady that was there, we were just looking at jewelry, and we started talking about pearls. And she was showing me the difference between a real pearl and a fake. Do you know what they are? You put it to your teeth. Now, that's how she showed me. I'm sure that there might be another way. But you put it to the teeth. Pearls are natural things that are formed inside the shell, and there's a roughness to them. When you put it to the teeth, it kind of has this just like a rock feel. The fake ones, it's like rubbing glass on them. And she knows. Those guys that work in jewelry stores who put that funny little thing to their eyes, they know if it's a real diamond or if it's a cubic zirconium. I don't know the difference. You probably can't tell the difference. They know the difference. It's okay if we don't know the difference between a diamond. It's okay if we don't know a real Chinese yen from a fake one. But we better know what God calls evil. And the only way we're going to know that is to examine. Examine what He has called good, what He has called right. Because truth is one. Truth is one. There is one truth. And we get that in every realm of life, except religion, it seems. Every mathematician knows that truth is one. 5 + 5 has exactly one correct answer. There's one answer to 5 + 5. You know how many wrong answers there are? Infinite. Everything except that one answer. Whether you start getting into fractions, whether you start getting into decimal points, anything above 10 is wrong. Anything below 10 is, or it's wrong. Go in either direction, however far you want to go. One answer. Everything else is wrong. In the spiritual realm, there is one system, one doctrine of truth. Everything else is false. And we've got to know which is the which. You know, that word abstain, such a simple rule. It's following it that's the trouble. We understand what it means. There's times when we have done it. And unfortunately, there's times when we haven't. Adam and Eve broke a simple rule. They didn't kill. They didn't steal. Some people would look back, well, you know, that was just so benign. That's usually how apostasy starts. Something really small. One small step. It's, let me throw this out. Since we just studied it a month ago, 2 months ago. Anything wrong with anything wrong with a cool night? Go outside and enjoy the breeze. Sit on your front porch and take it in. Anything wrong with that? Not a thing in the world. Until it leads to adultery. Not a thing in the world. Until it leads to murder. Not a thing in the world wrong with it. Until it leads to things that tears a family and a nation up. And that's what happened with David. What's wrong with this? Because there's lust of the eyes and that led to lust of the flesh. And that one small thing that led to another, that led to another. And we know the consequences. We just studied them. Sometimes we're the daredevil. Spiritual evil Knievel. Seeing how close to the mountain we can get without stepping off. Seeing how much racket we can make on a snow pitch before the avalanche crashes. Turn to Ephesians chapter 4. Here's the problem with playing around like that. Taking those small steps. It's so innocent. It's not that big a deal. In time, what happens is we become desensitized to sin. See it enough, it doesn't bother you as much. Hear it enough, it doesn't bother you as much. That's what happens to us. Our sensitivities get a little bit dulled. And Paul used the word calloused. Look at verse 18 of Ephesians 4. Having understanding darkened, the light's not as bright as it used to be. Alienated from the life of God through the ignorance that's in them because of the blindness of their heart, who being past feeling have given themselves over to lasciviousness. Past feeling. Newer versions use the word calloused. We know what it means when we have calluses on our hands. We know what it means when we have scabs come up. And you know, those scabs are, you know, no feeling in those scabs. What happens is we scab ourselves spiritually. We get calloused spiritually. Things that ought to hurt us. Don't get in. Things that ought to shock us. Don't give it a second thought. That's the desensitization that happens. That's the callousness and the hardening that can happen. Turn to Romans chapter 12. Here's what that leads to. Get calloused and all of a sudden toleration sets in. We won't hate what we're supposed to hate. Here's another one of those contrast things. Actually, it's basically this very same thing. It's just using different words. To the Thessalonians, abstain from all forms of evil. Hold on to that which is good. Romans chapter 12, verse 9. The old King James says abhor. Newer versions have extremely hate. Extremely hate that which is evil. Cleave to that which is good. These are mirror verses. Cleave to that which is good. To the Thessalonians said, hold tight. Abstain from all forms of evil. To the Romans, he says, extremely hate it. If you hate something, you're gonna put it away. You're gonna abstain from that. Extremely hate that which is evil. There might still be some things that maybe we don't hate them like we ought. We know it's sin. We recognize the reality of the sin. We know the truthfulness of the sin. But we've tolerated it so long. We've seen it so long. It just kind of becomes life in America. We've got to examine ourselves again. Because ultimately, what happens is you go from the desensitization and the callousness to the toleration, and ultimately it just moves over right into, it's not a big deal. Acceptance, if not defending sinful things. And this progression starts with just little things that get neglected, ending with this deadly disease. And so the admonition is, leave the daredevil stuff alone. And if that application doesn't fit, then you change it to whatever application fits. That would make the point. Leave the daredevil stuff alone. We're not seeing how close we can get. We're not seeing how much we can endure by way of temptation. No, there are things to abstain from. There are things to extremely hate. There are things to hold tight to. There are things to cleave to. And the only way we're going to know which is to examine. We got to put our nose in the book. We've got to know which is which. And once we've determined which is which, now we know what to do with it. We know what to hold on to. We know what to get rid of. Stay out of the jungle. Stop trying to hold snakes by the tail, thinking we're not going to ultimately get bitten at some point. It's ridiculous. Because the truth is, we probably have all done it before. We know how it ends up. We may have been the one who tried to get a little closer until we were sucked up in it. We're the ones that was trying to put ourselves in positions thinking we would handle it, and all of a sudden we realized, too late, I'm not handling it, etc. Get your songbooks out. Here's a chance for us to deal with our sin. Lord willing, we've still got a couple of hours together here. Various other studies to go through. If something hindering your ability to worship, Julia, let us in prayer. And we're worshiping God, and He's worthy of that. If something's hindering your ability to do it, maybe something because we have not abstained as we should have. Maybe it's because we haven't held tight as we should have. Whatever. However it fits, it fits. And whatever's hindering our ability to worship, it's hindering our ability to worship. And we need to fix it now so that we can go on forward through our time together. If we can help you do that, we want to. Do it while we stand and sing.